broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. It's the Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.
Now, here's Mark and Matt.
Welcome, everyone, to the Refresh Your Wealth podcast with Matt Sorensen and Mark Kohler. Man, it's a good day to be listening to a podcast. And yes, you're listening to a tax and legal podcast with two attorneys, one of them who's also especially nerdy and a CPA. Welcome.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know, did I get you excited? Are you excited?
Yeah, well, thanks for that amazing intro. a nerdy CPA on the line.
You gotta own it. Just own it. It's okay.
I'm just gonna own it. That's right.
You know, man, surfer, scoutmaster,
and nerd.
Was a good racquetball player. I don't know if your racquetball game is still any good, but I don't know.
Yeah. Racquetball's kind of a sport that comes and goes in the sporting world. People kind of get Mark into it for a few years.
Mark and I played once. And I didn't even think I got on the board. Like, I don't even know. It's called points. I don't even know how you score in racquetball. Let's just say we have never played again.
Yeah. Count the points where I hit Matt in the butt with a racquetball. Those were points.
Those are like touchdowns or something.
Okay. Yeah. I'm coming to you from sunny Southern California. Matt in sunny Phoenix. It's summertime. Hopefully where you're at, it's a beautiful day. And I'm doing a new spot tomorrow, Matt. I got KTLA in the morning talking about the gig economy. I'll be live at the news desk, which is always, that's pressure. When I get recorded, it's cool. You know, I have fun. People, you know, you guys see my YouTube videos. It's fun. But, man, when you're live, you're at the news desk and producers in your ear, it's.
I'll have to take your word for it. I mean, Mark's been on world tour, books coming out, was in New York on Bloomberg. By the way, I didn't even check in. How that went?
Well, it went good. It went really well. Sorry, you see, I'm working on my grammar too. Obviously, it went really well. I was in New York yesterday and Bloomberg. So that was recorded. So they're going to do some mixing. That was more acting. It was kind of funny. We had a wardrobe change. They go, we want you to bump into this guy in the hall and start talking. And then you're going to sit down and do this and do that. And I'm like, oh, it's like 15 takes of each scene. I'm like, oh my gosh. So it was a little more stressful. When you got a producer trying to direct a CPA, you know, it's not going to go well. You know, it's just, it's a train wreck waiting to happen. So,
Got it. I can see that.
So anyway, I love talking about it because it's exciting. I've got a newfound respect for Matt Lauer, you know, when he was not because of his personal problems in life, but no, when you watch the Today Show, and I've actually went to New York with my daughter, and we went in the morning, you know, anybody that's watched the Today Show in the morning, everybody's around the crowd and you're trying to get on there, you know, and hold your little sign. I didn't have a dorky little sign, but I was there and they had a live band that day. And man, when you see them manhandling the teleprompter and the crowd and everything going on, It is amazing the talent of like Savannah Guthrie and those groups. It's crazy. It's multitasking at its best.
Yeah, so. They're just not pretty faces, you know?
No, they're not. We got to quit BSing around here. Let's get to it.
Let's get to it. Well, today's show, we're going to be talking about commercial real estate. Want to talk about many of you who may invest in residential real estate. We're going to talk about some of the things to know and getting into commercial, also give some tips to those that may be already familiar with commercial. So we'll bring on a special guest, Spencer Taylor, in the later half of the show. But, you know, we like to kick it off with a tax and legal tip. And you want to do the legal tip, Mark?
Well, I will say this as I'm going to let you kick it off with the tax tip. Yes, we're going to turn the tax tip to Matt. And new listeners, we want to welcome you. We've been doing this for 10 plus years. And we really do put a lot of work into trying to prepare good guests and thoughtful topics and tips for every week. And so we hope that you'll find today's show rewarding enough to make it one of your favorites and share it with your family and friends. So I kind of give the tax tip as the resident CPA on the show, but this week I learned a new tip. I was going back and forth on my YouTube channel with comments. I get some haters. I kind of get sucked into that. I get some people that are like fans, and I get on. That's kind of my little pet project at night. I'll get on YouTube and I'm making comments, yeah. And I shouldn't do it. It's a waste of freaking time, maybe. But anyway, this guy came at me and he goes, "You need to do this tip." And I'm like, "I don't even think that exists." So I text Matt, and Matt's like, "Dude, this is totally legit." And I'm like, "What?" So I wanted to tell everybody listening, I learned a couple things this week. I always do. There's so much to learn in this arena. And Matt Sorensen was the sensei, and I was the student. Matt was the, what was I? I was the pupil. You were the teacher. It was amazing. Uh-huh. So Matt, there we go. So this is a tax tip that rocks. Is that?
Yes.
That's a good intro.
This is a good one. I appreciate that. And it's down my lane in retirement plans. So hopefully I don't say something dumb. Cause I don't have that CPA credential at the end of my name, you know, ruining my personal life and any credibility I have outside of accounting topics.
You know, I just give you this great intro and then you just slam me on the way back. All right, let's hear some guitar. Let's do it.
Yeah.
A tax tip you can actually understand and won't put you to sleep.
A tax tip that could save you thousands.
Okay, for those of you familiar with the backdoor Roth IRA, another favorite topic of mine, I got some articles on that. It's a great tax strategy for high-income people or people who are already maxing out 401k plans. Throw a little more money into a Roth IRA called backdoor Roth IRA. There is another variety of this. Another flavor, if you want to say it that way, called the backdoor 401k, backdoor Roth 401k. And the way this works is in a 401k plan, as long as your 401k allows for two things, you can have Roth contributions. You have to have Roth contributions, and the plan has to allow for in-plan rollover to Roth. Now, 90% of 401k plans out there, even if you're working at the Dunder Mifflin, you got the Dunder Mifflin 401k, okay? You probably have this option in your 401k plan. Now, there may not be someone that knows what the heck you're talking about, but it's probably in there. This is the good news. And what happens is, and so this, you could have a solo 401k that, with the Roth option in this. You could, it could be in corporate America 401k, whatever. Now, in any 401k with the Roth option, which again, most have, you can put in $19,000 a year of Roth dollars. That's your employee contributions. If you made 19 grand, you can put 19,000 in any 401k as Roth dollars. That's pretty cool, right? That's way more than I can do in a Roth IRA.
Yeah.
And I can also fund an additional $37,000 of after-tax contributions as the employee. I don't have to care whether my company's matching or not, but after-tax contributions as the employee, and then I can convert those in step two over to Roth dollars, effectively allowing me to put $56,000 into a Roth each year.
Oh my word. Now, Matt, hold it. I want to ask this again too, because this just blows my mind. This is so freaking awesome. Isn't that additional contribution really company profits?
Nope.
Or is it, it's not profit sharing?
Nope. It usually is, like if your company allows for match. The total maximum you can put into a 401k or profit sharing plan like this is 56,000. Okay. Now, usually it comes through a combination of maxing out the regular, you know, employee contribution of 19 and the employer matching everything with the rest. That's usually how you get to the 56 max.
And you get a write-off for that. The company gets a write-off.
Correct.
So if you need the write-off, then you would put in the rest of that money up to 56 through profit sharing or matching to get.
Exactly. And that's the more standard, typical way people do it. But if you're a Roth fan, which we are, I am, if you're a Roth fan, you're like, you know what? I'd rather throw way more Roth into it. I'm not worried about the tax deduction. What you want to do then is you make an after-tax contribution and you convert it to Roth. Now, I've had clients do this at Fidelity, you know, clients that have, you know, big corporate 401k plans, and they finally get to someone at Fidelity that can help them make this two-step, you know, thing go. And so it's not like you have to have your own solo K or anything like that. So this is definitely a strategy that's viable in a lot of 401ks. Now, here's the hitch, and it's similar to the backdoor Roth IRA. If you have other traditional 401k dollars in the plan, you have to convert that first. Similar to if I got a traditional IRA and I'm trying to do a backdoor Roth IRA, I have to convert my regular traditional IRA to Roth first.
So which isn't a bad thing, because if you want to get money into your Roth anyway, just
the low hanging fruit, convert what's already there.
Yeah,
just convert. But you pay tax on it. That's the downside, you know.
Yeah.
But again, you would have been throwing more money in to it after tax that you were going to convert. So why not convert what's there and use the money that you would have thrown in to pay the tax? I don't know.
Yeah.
Another way to look at it.
Well, what I love about this is when I shot my YouTube video a couple months ago on how to have $1 million Roth IRA by the time you retire. Now, everybody listen, I know that sounds crazy. How can I have $1 million Roth by the time I retire? And I put 67, which is the new 57. I hope it is, because I'm getting old. But anyway, yeah. Could I have $1 million in a Roth? And I shot this video, and I presumed a 12% return on the money. And everybody went ballistic. How can you do that? Whoa. And I also put in there the assumption that you could put in $6,000, $15,000, $20,000 into a Roth when you were in your 50s to get there in time. And everybody went ballistic again. You can't do that. You can only do 6,000 in Roth. I mean, there was so much misinformation out there and lack of education. And I was like a heretic at the Salem witch trials, and I was going to get burned at the stake for suggesting this.
Right.
But then when someone was coming back at me on this and on another strategy, I was like, now you're getting too greedy, people. You can't do that. So I called Matt, and Matt tells me about this. I'm like, oh my word, this is crazy. 56 grand into a Roth every year.
Yeah.
Now I know some people out there are like, man, Mark, I'm good if I can put away $5,000. I get it. I know that.
Yeah.
But hopefully someday you're making enough money where this is even a possibility. I'm not putting away 56 grand a year, people. I'm not. So, but there are people that are successful enough that want to do this. That's just unbelievable.
Yeah. And this came about, by the way, in 2014, the IRS had a notice on it where basically someone asked the question and they started getting a lot of commentary from industry. It looks like it's okay. Can we be doing this? And so, yeah, the IRS confirmed it. It's IRS notice 2014-54. And we might have a blog article a year or two ago on this. If we don't, I'm going to revive one and get one up. But yeah. Consider this if you're looking to get more Roth dollars in a 401k, whether it's your solo K or whether it's a, you know, you got your corporate America 401k, you're working somewhere else.
Yeah, I love it. That is so cool. Well, all right. Now, before I give the legal tip, I want to just give a little travel tip here. It's just so funny, and I'm grateful for this. I live in this small town in Idaho. And it's good for me. I grew up in a small town in Washington State on a farm, moving pipe for an alfalfa. And, you know, it was a good experience for me. I love the small town America. I feel most at home in there. But I get to travel around the world, and mostly around America. And, of course, I don't travel around the world. I'm not a jet setter like that. But doing business and speaking at conferences and doing some news things. And so, the next couple of days, I'm in Southern California. And it's just funny. I got off that plane. I got my rental car. I said, Matt, let's record the show. So I got in a quiet place. And I'm just looking out the window here. And it's so funny. I'm looking at this parking lot. And I've got this convertible Audi with two blondes in it, cut off this Porsche. And the guy honks at him. And then I got this guy in a Range Rover pulling up, door dinging this other BMW. Then a Lamborghini drives by. I'm like, where am I? What planet am I on?
It's
the craziest thing. Normally I'm in this small town where it's like I got a Ford F-150, you know, pulling a trailer, you know, with crap flying out of it. It's, America's a fun place. Yeah, it's just different.
Yeah. Everywhere. Yeah. Well, that's what makes travel fun. You know, you get to see the different varieties. As I told my 18-year-old daughter and her friends, variety's the spice of life. Yeah. And They now make fun of me for that little quote. But I like to give my kids these one-liner quotes and their friends, which they like to give back to me. But remember that little variety, travel the country, see different things. That's a good thing.
It is. It keeps you grounded. Okay. Well, here is my legal tip, and you guys are going to love it.
A legal tip that you can actually use.
A legal tip where you don't feel like you have to take a shower after.
Okay, so my legal tip is in line with our estate planning month. This is our month out of the year where we talk estate planning. I'm going to give that an important challenge to everybody at the end of this tip. So privacy is becoming a big planning item in almost all of our consultations now. 3 years ago, when I wrote my tax and legal playbook, first edition, I added a chapter on privacy, and it was almost like an afterthought. Let's do it. Let's just talk about privacy. And it's become a very important chapter of the second edition. And Matt and I just interviewed JJ Luna, one of the world's experts on privacy strategies. To take yourself off the grid in an emergency or safety situation, as well as just good financial planning to be more private. With the onset of the internet and technology, we know that the real threat to us is not getting held up by a gunpoint or knife in an alley. It's someone committing financial fraud with our personal information. Yeah. And the criminals have gotten so much more tech savvy. So anyway, privacy is critical. And so what we've wanted to make sure our clients are considering is the revocable living trust with a privacy blanket or a privacy benefit. And what that means is when you do your trust that's going to hold your assets, your corporations, your LLCs, own your home, that's common. 20 years ago, I named my trust the Mark and Jennifer Kohler Revocable Living Trust, dated blah, blah, blah. That was what you did. Well, we're changing that. And over the last 3 to 5 years, we are now recommending to clients to do two things to add that privacy strategy. And here's the goal, people. I don't want your name on anything, and I don't want your address out there. If you Google yourself, you're going to be shocked. Your address, Google Maps, your personal info is everywhere. And so we have got to be better at stripping that off public domains, public records. So you set up a trust, which is great for estate planning, which we're doing right now. And we don't charge any extras to do this, to add two features. The first one is your trust should be anonymous. Make sure that your trust does not have your name in it. Call it the purple rain, blue sky, green hills, trust, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And date it a certain date. It's
Purple Rain, Blue Sky. That was like Prince, Purple Rain, Blue Sky, Midnight Oil. Is that what yours? Album names or something?
Well, I don't know. Red's,
or is Purple Rain just a song? I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Beds Are Burning. Red Sails. Ooh, that was a Midnight Oil album. Anyway, but a little 80s flashback. But come up with a fun name. It could be your favorite band. It could be your favorite pet. It could be the place where you met your lover, you know, whatever. Just come up with a name and name your trust that's unique to you. And then that's what takes public ownership of your assets, your LLCs, your corporations, and it enhances your just home. Your asset. Yeah.
Your home. That's the big home. One, that's the one where what's your address?
Yeah.
Search and Mark so that's Kohler.
Totally. It's going to enhance your asset protection. And I don't want your name anywhere. And you start to strip your name off stuff. It takes time. Sometimes you hit reset and you buy everything with cash and you go off the grid. That's cool. But we can't do that. Sometimes we've got to take our time. Never take title again in your own name and use your privacy trust, which also is the foundation of your estate plan. Okay. Number two, don't put your address anywhere. Now, some of you have a P.O. box down the street. It's cheap. It's easy. It's in your little town. It's like $100 a year. Do your P.O. box thing. But I got clients in Seattle where it's $200 or $300, and the P.O. box service is 5 miles away. Mm-hmm. You can do it easier. We have a virtual mailbox forwarding service. You can talk to Courtney at our office. Just call and ask for Courtney. And for $200, we'll do up to 3 entities. And one of those entities could be you or your trust. So now you've got a virtual mailbox where all of your mail is scanned. You can look at it online, discard it, save it, whatever. It's now it's digitally recorded. How cool is that? All of your mail is digitally recorded. You can be anywhere in the world and look at your mail, and no one knows your home address. That's the goal. So if you can combine a privacy name with a privacy address and start putting that everywhere, even on your utility bills and everything. And JJ Luna, we loved him. We had him on our show 3 months ago. Get his book, How to Be Invisible. We love it. It's an excellent book. Just Google JJ Luna or go to Amazon. He's got a fourth edition coming out now. But start paying attention to this, people. And Matt, I don't know. Do you want to add to that before I give a challenge here?
Yeah, well, I would say, you know, for some people are like, you know what? I don't care where people know where I live, you know. Well, you get some rental properties and some disgruntled tenants you got to evict. You own a business and you get some business dispute or employee issue or competitor issue or, you know, something going on. You know, you might be a little careful about knowing where, having everybody know where you live. And so it's, you never care about that until you've got some situation on your hands. And
yep.
So that's what we're just trying to prepare you for, is for that situation that could come down the road where you really would value and want to be private. A lot of people already, especially as you said, in today's day and age, are already like, man, just with all the amount of fraud going on and people could pull your address and use it to verify information at financial institutions or, you know, or just keeping that a little more private is a lot of people are already sold on it. So I just want to put that into context for a lot of you that maybe own rental properties or businesses that it's maybe a little more important for you to consider.
Yeah. And I want to throw this out too. And we're, Matt and I have never been fear tactic guys. We don't sell crap on fear, but we need to be aware of things. And so I want to say this, this is kind of an awareness, not a fear issue, is watch Dateline once in a while. Just turn on the news. Look at what happened in Virginia this week. You know, some nut that turns in their 2 weeks notice at work and then just comes back and starts shooting everybody. I mean, this, you don't even hear in the news the one or two person shootings anymore, the two or threes. Yeah, it's got to be 10 plus people before it hits national news. It happens every day. Psychotic people do weird stuff and they show up at your home and they show up on your doorstep. And I am looking forward to the day where I can go off the grid a little more privately. And one of the tips I give in a webinar I just recorded a week ago, I've got to put that out on the newsletter. I didn't do it this week. Is when you go to be private, make sure you communicate and you're on the same page with your family and your significant other. Because if you want to be private, but your spouse doesn't, it's going to be a hard uphill battle. So you want to get your spouse or your whoever you live with on board on this too. So anyway, there's so much to talk about. We probably need to do a whole show more again on privacy. You can see where we go. It's a rabbit hole. But here's my challenge to everybody. It is our estate planning month. Over 50% of Americans don't even have a will. And I'm going to be blunt. People, Matt and I give a ton on the show. We do a newsletter every week for free. We're never going to charge for that. We do a YouTube videos at least weekly. We're asking you now, get your estate plan done. We're knocking off a couple hundred bucks. You can trust us. We're going to do it right. We've got five attorneys in our office. You can meet, you'll get an hour with one of them to design your estate plan. And talk about anything you want. We can add the privacy feature, good kids, bad kids, kids under age 18, no kids, second marriage, whatever it is, we will put it in your estate plan. Get it done. We're asking you, we're giving you a discount once a year to do it. And we don't ask much. We try to give a ton here. And so I'm going to be blunt. Get your crap together. And if you own a business, I want to put a business continuation plan in your estate plan. What happens to my rentals? What happens to my business? Now, your estate plan became a business deduction because your business needed that estate plan for the business continuation. I'm going to write that off. Mm-hmm. Tell your CPA it was a business continuation plan. So get it done. Just go to kkoslawyers.com, kkoslawyers.com. And on the homepage, it says annual estate planning special. Click on it, pay for it. It's a tax deduction. It's done. You'll get an hour scheduled with an attorney. And you can add this privacy feature. You can add so many little perks and bells and whistles, and it's all included. So there you go. I'm going to be blunt and ask everybody, get it done. We're not going to take advantage.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of those things. If you don't have it, everyone needs it. We will all die. Sorry to bum you out. And it's one of those things too, we've realized is is we've never run into a client that says, nah, I don't need that or want it. Everybody needs it and recognizes it. Everybody wants it. But how many of you have it? And it's like life insurance. I think most people have bought life insurance. Well, why'd you buy life insurance? Because I know I'm going to die one day and I got a plan for that. Okay. Well, what about all your other crap? How's that life insurance going to get distributed? Mm-hmm. What about all your other assets? What about your home? What about your business? What if you have rental properties? What about your retirement account? All this stuff that you didn't coordinate, but you went and bought one life insurance policy. Okay. Well, just get your stuff together. Just do it once. It's done. If you got to change it because, you know, a kid doesn't act like a grown up or you got to change something, fine, change it. Easy. But just get it done. It's not that hard. We're making it easy for you right now by helping you save some money. So, all right.
Yeah. And we are not an infomercial show. People that are regular
this is your first time listening. Yeah. That's
yeah. We
just think everybody needs it. So,
yeah. This is very uncommon. Okay. Well, the special ends on Father's Day in 2 weeks. So, do it for your father. Buy your dad an estate plan. Say, I'm going to pay for this year and get it done. And you can be on the phone call with your parents and help them through it. And we'll welcome anybody that wants to be on there. Okay. Well, Matt, as as we previously planned, Matt has got a great relationship with a commercial real estate investor that he's going to interview for us. I'm not going to be able to be a part of that interview. I've got a speaking event I've got to rush off to now here in the Southern California area. And sometimes I interview our guests, sometimes Matt does. So we're going to transition to that. And I just think it's great. I own commercial rentals and residential rentals. Matt does. It's kind of funny, Matt. We both do. And we really need to have that balance of some commercial and some residential. And someone asked that we cover a show on commercial. So this is it.
Okay. Well, it is my pleasure now to welcome Spencer Taylor, who is here with me as our special guest to talk about commercial real estate. I don't know the companies that Spencer's with, or I don't know, you can elaborate on that. I know Mill Creek Commercial. So Spencer, why don't you let us know about you, what you're up to in the commercial real estate space, and then I'm going to just hammer away at you with my commercial real estate questions.
Well, Matt, thank you first off for having me on. I love your show, listen to it often, and I enjoy all the great content you guys give out. I just feel like you guys are rich. You always give more than it seems like you take. So thank you. It's a good honor. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet. Our pleasure.
So we're Mill Creek Commercial, and we are based in the Salt Lake City area. And real quick, what we do is we go out and buy what we feel like is the best investment grade commercial real estate out there. Mm-hmm. So single tenant, triple net buildings, long-term leases, exceptional tenants, great real estate fundamentals, that sort of thing. And then we purchase it without leverage, without debt. And then we kind of, for lack of a better word, we reverse syndicate it. We sell out our equity in smaller pieces to investors that maybe don't have access or don't want to use all the capital to buy a building on their own. And so we'll sell it in $50,000, $100,000, $400,000 shares, deeded interests, tenant in common interests. And we see ourselves as kind of giving access to assets that might be out of reach for some people.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously someone could go out and buy a commercial property themselves, whether it's single tenant or multi-tenant, if they have the capital or maybe a combination of capital and credit. You guys have an ability to, for people to invest essentially in your properties that you've purchased and they're buying in into pieces of it and have an actual deeded title to it. But let's talk about just commercial in general. Yeah. I want to go through one of your deals and help people understand it. So, what the heck's triple net? If I've been renting, you know, residential rentals and I hear all these commercial people talk about triple net, let's just hit a couple basics for those new to commercial. What's triple net? What does that mean to me?
So triple net are the three expenses, hence triple, the three expenses above and beyond what the tenant pays for in rent. So first they have their rent that they pay to the landlord. and the three expenses above and beyond that. And this is why we love commercial real estate.
Yeah, this is a perk, guys. If you don't know triple net, this is a, you're going to love it.
Residential rentals are not triple net, but here are the three extra expenses charged to the tenant. So first, taxes on the building.
Yeah, property taxes, yeah.
Property taxes. Insurance on the building. And then like 98% of the maintenance is charged to the tenant. So broken windows, clogged toilets, broken water heater, right? The tenant covers all those expenses. They call the plumber, they get the bid, they decide what, you know, they decide what plumber to use. And it makes owning these properties, I mean, pretty close to like a hands-off landlording experience.
Yeah. Yeah. You got the leasing stage and you have some management and collection of rent, obviously. Right. But, man, you're not eating those unexpected costs of maintenance on the property. You know, even if it's the landscaping or, you know, all that stuff, snow removal, depending on where your properties are, a lot of crap. If you go on commercial, and just think of, you know, the parking lot, you know, I mean, Mark and I own some commercial properties and that's, you know, I mean, as owners of that, you know, we're paying to have the, in our Utah office, which we own, we're paying for the freaking snow to get, you know, moved. And so, but as a landlord, you know, you're pushing that on to the tenant, which is awesome. So plus obviously your property taxes, which can be big in a lot of states in particular, which can be a big expense.
Well, the tenant has every incentive to make sure, you know, the snow is removed so people can park there, that the glass is good, that the toilets are in good working order. And so it, in my mind, it lines up very well with success of the tenant has a lot to do with success of kind of the building, the look and feel and all that, the landscaping. And so those incentives really line up very well to how the tenant would like to operate their business.
Okay. All right. The other one, just basic thing I want to get out is cap rate. If you can just describe that quickly. Yeah. That's if you're looking at commercial or maybe some of the, you have been in the multifamily space, you know, even I like to look at it just even on residential rentals, but when you're looking at any property, commercial property, you're looking at a multifamily property, they're talking cap rate. So what is cap rate? What do I need to know?
So a cap rate is a calculation, and what it, the way it's calculated is your return, it's essentially your ROI. So let's say a property cash flows $100,000 a year, right? So if you buy that property, well, let me do a quick calculation here. You know, I'm not that good at math, but you know,
real estate. Yeah.
So if it cash flows $100,000 a year and you buy it at a 6% cap rate, that you're going to buy it for $1.666 million, right? If it cash flows $100,000 a year and you buy it for 6.5% cap rate, you're going to pay just over $1.5 million. So the cap rate is essentially the ROI. So when you purchase a building, you want that cap rate to be really, really high. That means you're going to buy, the building's going to be less expensive in terms of purchase price. If you're a seller, you want that cap rate to be really, really low. And the purchase price on that is going to be very much higher for the buyer.
Yeah.
And so it's a little counterintuitive, but basically the fixed number in that equation are the rents collected. And depending on what cap rate you want would determine the purchase price of that building.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're looking at the rents collected, or so as you say, maybe cash flow. It doesn't include debt service though, but just, you know, cash flow on it. And then also looking at the purchase price to get that. And, but you're right. Like, I think it's funny that, cause cap rates have gone down, right? Which is in your examples, you said that that's great for sellers, right? That means the prices have gone up.
Yeah.
And so what are people seeing like right now in cap rates? Like what are you seeing in commercial in particular, maybe even multifamily, but what are you seeing in commercial and cap rates right now?
So we're seeing them creep up.
Okay.
And I'm not smart enough to have a theory on why that is, though I've heard people say it has a lot to do with interest rates going up, but interest rates, I think, are creeping back down. So there's a lot of different factors, I think, that determine what a cap rate is. The most, I think the most influential factor is just demand, right? Yeah. Someone really wants it. They don't mind paying a cap rate of 4.2% on a Starbucks ground lease, right? Because they know Starbucks is going to be there forever and it's a ground lease. And you know, there's just very, very little risk in that, as opposed to maybe a commercial property, a multifamily with 50% occupancy. You know, your cap rate might even be, depending on where it is, over 10 or 12%. But you know, that's going to require a lot of sweat equity probably and time to get that cash flowing better. So
okay, let's talk about from the investor standpoint, someone looking to invest into commercial real estate. What should they be looking at? Like if they were going to do it themselves, let's say I was going to buy my own commercial property.
Owner occupied.
I was going to for investment purposes.
Investment purposes.
Yeah. Okay. And then I want to invest with someone else, that someone else is doing a commercial real estate, then I'm just going to be an investor. So if I'm doing the deal myself, like what's my common things I need to look out for?
Well, let me just share with you kind of the four criteria we use when we buy.
Okay. Yeah.
And we acquire a property to put in our portfolio. So first and foremost, we like single tenant buildings.
Right.
And we like it because it makes it very simple. You know, think of like a CVS, you know, they always basically have their own building. Other types is like a strip mall with maybe 4 or 6 units, you know, and so you'll have 4 or 6 tenants in there. That, you know, with build out and different things like that, it becomes a little more complicated. And then it becomes really complicated with like office, and you're dealing with 10 plus possible tenants. You just have to make a lot of people happy just to keep the money coming in. So we like the simple side of it. So we like one tenant, one building. And then we try to get that building to have a lease on it that's as close to an absolute triple net. We just did one where the tenant covered roof, structure, parking lot, foundation, you know, everything. They covered everything. And those are unlikely, but most triple nets, the landlord is going to be covering any expenses related to the roof or parking lot or structure. Beyond that, you know, broken windows, all of that.
Yeah.
That's mostly a triple net property. So we really like triple net. And then we like a tenant that is just exceptional in every way. They're triple B minus credit rated or better, which means if they shut down that location, they're strong enough to weather a storm. And they've signed what's called a corporate guarantee on that lease. And if they shut that down, that location down, they're going to continue to pay on it. Mm-hmm. And so let me just share a few tenants that we really like. Mm-hmm. Family Dollar, Dollar Tree. We've done K Jeweler. We've done banks. Banks are good. We like banks. We really like industrial. Maybe like manufacturing or logistics, because they're not really household names, but they're great companies and it's very expensive for them to relocate like across the street to save a few bucks on their rent. Right.
Right.
So we really like those natural, those kind of natural elements in their business that keep them there, mm-hmm. in that location. So they'll sign a 10 or 15 or 20 year lease. And we really like that because it's just super stable.
Yeah. Okay. So let me just unpack some of those things. You said four things, but so you like obviously as much triple net as you can. You like single tenant.
We like single tenant, yeah.
Where you can zero in on who's that exact tenant. And you know, you mentioned a lot of publicly traded companies and companies that are signing corporate guarantees.
Yeah.
That location goes out, they're still on the hook, they're paying the lease, whether they like it or not.
Yep.
And I think with this is a good distinction, something I think I've learned from what you just said there is, if you think of the office scenario, I used to think in the office buildings we're in with our type of professional business and things, you know, there's a lot of tenants in there. A lot of them are small businesses, you know, they might have 5,000 square feet or less. And, but it's very transient. If there's a better deal across the street and I can save, or they're going to do a better build out than what I have now, I'll go across the street. But if I'm a single tenant or an industrial company, like you said, they are really locked in on that property, right? And
that's right. So mostly they're paying more per square foot. These transient type businesses, they're paying more per square foot typically because of the nature of their business. But you know, they have a good year and they hire four new people. They need a new space, mm-hmm. right? So they got to move. They got to move somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So that leads to in favor to certain single tenant. I get your guys' strategy there, but, okay. Was there four? Was there something else that I cut you off yet? Or is there one left or two?
So, and then the fourth one was a long-term lease. So we like a lease that's at least 10 years or more.
Okay.
And there's a huge trade-off with that. There's a huge trade-off. So most of these 5-year leases, they're increasing the rent at like 3% every year.
Yeah.
In a lot of small spaces or flex spaces where there's maybe like some office and some warehouse. With a long-term lease, you get maybe one or two rental increases in that 10-year period. And the trade-off is you get security. You get a lot of security. And toward the end of the lease, those dollars become maybe a little less valuable because of inflation. But hey, they renew, they extend, they renew. Then that jumps up and it kind of catches you up. And so there's a stability trade-off there.
Yeah.
In a long-term lease.
Okay. All right, let's maybe talk about from the investor perspective, and maybe you can talk about one of the deals you guys have done or something to give a good example. So let's say I'm an investor and I just want to invest in commercial deals.
Yeah. Like
other people that have maybe syndicated it or syndicating it to buy now, or someone reverse syndicated it like you guys do. What should I be looking for to invest in someone else's deals?
Yeah, good question. So I would say, do your due diligence on the tenant, the quality of the tenant.
Yeah. Because they're cutting you a check every month.
Yes.
Or they're not.
Yes.
Right? Like, so, yes. Like, that's like kind of a big deal. I think that's a really good point. I used to always tell clients when they're renting properties, like clients will spend months to find the right rental property, even just a single family rental.
Mm-hmm.
And then the first application that comes in to lease, they rent it to them. It's like, you spent how much time finding the property, but then the person that's actually going to pay you or not,
yep.
You just took the first one. You saw, but you didn't buy the first property you saw, did you? Nope. Okay, well, let's be a little more careful about that. Anyways.
So like,
here's how you started with that, even before the property.
Yeah. So here's a good example. Let's say we have like 7,000 square foot building, like block building, mm-hmm. like the tin roof, you know, just a basic building.
Yeah.
And we have two tenant choices. One is an O'Reilly's Auto Parts.
Okay.
The other one is XYZ Furniture Store. O'Reilly wants to sign a 10-year lease and they'll pay $10,000 a month.
Okay.
To lease that space. Mom, Pa, furniture store is offering you like 13.5 to lease that space. Mm-hmm. O'Reilly's wants to sign a 10-year lease. Furniture store wants to sign a 3-year lease. No options, right? Mm-hmm. Our natural tendency is to say, why would I ever go with O'Reilly's when I can get $3,500 more a month? Mm-hmm. But the reality is there's so much speculation in a mom and pop furniture store.
Yeah.
Right? Where they don't have a corporate guarantee on that lease. Like,
yeah.
If they operate 5 months and then they shut down, mm-hmm. like, you can sue them, but they have no money.
Right.
And so
here's an interesting little digression here. I think on your point is in commercial real estate, you know, like when you're a landlord and you're renting to commercial or retail tenants, you're renting to businesses, mm-hmm. right? You're going to want, when you're dealing with a large commercial company, right? Like a big company, an O'Reilly's or someone, you know, the Dollar General or PNC Bank, some of the stuff you've mentioned, deals you guys have done. Like those are coming with corporate guarantees, right? The corporation standing behind it. If I got Ma and Pa furniture store, well, their corporate guarantee is worth crap, right? They're a small business. So I want to get a guarantee. So this is, even if you did choose to go with Ma and Pa furniture store, and maybe that's your only tenant choice, you want to definitely get a personal guarantee from them, right? But here's the thing, how much is that personal guarantee worth? And how long does it take to re-lease a commercial space? It's not like a residential rental, right? Someone's out of my rental 1 month, I get someone in 1 month, I maybe lose a month of rent turnover. In a commercial lease, turnover time is way longer than that. So you get a lot more sunk costs. Just, I'll give you one example. I had this client on the tenant side. They did it was like a paintball company, something, I don't know. Anyways, they could not get a commercial lease until my client signed the personal guarantee.
Like a retail, or like go inside and
like a retail
each other?
Retail, and then they had like a facility where you could go shoot people, you know?
Yeah, okay.
Go shoot your friends, you know? They'd sell stuff and whatever. So, the business goes under. My client was one of the partners and signed the guarantee, and the commercial tenant sued him, right? Gets him sucked into it. Well, mm-hmm. there's only so far they can go with him. Right. This lease is multiple years, and it's not like a major corporation that you know, next month is going to pay that. You know, this is a long drawn out process of him now negotiating and trying to get out from under it and all this and all this stuff. So very, very important point.
So, yeah. So make sure the tenant is strong enough to make their lease payment, because A commercial building is valued on not what the building was built for next to it or the building sold for next to it. It's dependent on how much income it can produce. And so that's why, you know, it is not residential. Like you can like make it apples to apples, right? Oh, my neighbor's house sold for $400,000 more than I thought it would. Man, the value of my home automatically goes up. Well, in a commercial building, you could have one building outfitted for doctor's offices and another building outfitted for paintball. Mm-hmm. Which building is going to be more valuable?
Yeah.
Probably the one with more stability, right? Right. That has like awesome rental history and awesome paint, you know, all of that stuff. So,
right, yeah.
So just make sure that there's a really good tenant. Second, man, we talk about our plan B on every single property we purchase. So if there's not like a way that we can convince ourselves that someone else just as good as the current tenant could come in and rent that, like, then we won't do it. So we like to be great real estate fundamentals on the busiest corner in the county. Let me give you an example of our PNC Bank. It's a ground lease. And PNC Bank is like 10 and a half years into a 20-year lease with 4 or 5 year options to renew. And so we, as the owner, own the ground and PNC Bank owns the building.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So people like this because there's a huge incentive for the bank to stay, right?
Right.
Because that old adage, like, you can't take it with you.
Right. Yeah.
And so if they leave, who keeps the building? Well, we do. So people like that. But if they leave, okay, then we try to rent it, lease it to Bank of America, Wells Fargo. And let's just say it's not happening. Great. We can scrape it and then build something for CVS, right? So we have a lot of plan Bs with that property, that with that PNC Bank property in, in St. Louis. And so if we don't see a plan B that is maybe more profitable than the current, or could be more profitable, or could be just as good, we won't do it. We just won't do it. There's, we don't want speculation in anything we do, is even in our plan B. So that's kind of, that's a big discussion topic when we go to acquire a building is, okay, what happens in 15 years if they leave? What do we do?
No, it's good. Good to think through. Okay. What else is the investor? Any final tips for someone looking to invest? What else they should be looking at?
So we just helped a landlord, a residential landlord, 1031 exchange out of their $410,000 rental into, they actually split it up halvesies and went into our Dollar Tree and our PNC Bank.
Okay.
And they told me they thought they were doing great with their residential rental. They were doing like $1,700 a month. They thought that was great. They owned it outright. They sold it because they were getting older. They didn't want to handle all the little maintenance, you know, mowing the lawn, right? And so we did a quick calculation. They were getting a, almost 4.5% ROI on their money, not based on what they bought it for 37 years ago,
but
what it's worth today, what they sold it for.
Yeah.
And so we put them in something that generates 6%. And zero headache and zero mowing lawns and unclogging toilets. And so I, you know, one of the reasons we got into this is because we kept thinking that maybe residential rental isn't the best option for everyone. And so I think that if you're thinking about what any sort of real estate, take the time, do some homework. Find out what you like, find out what you don't like, and then find the best solution for you. I'm sure there's two or three solutions out there that you you didn't think existed, and they exist. Just put a little work in and find the right solution.
Yeah. And as Mark and I said at the beginning of the show, it's not like you need to do one or the other. I think a lot of people that invest in residential real estate get into commercial and start doing a little commercial. They don't abandon residential altogether. Maybe, you know, your example of the older couple, maybe that's just like the right time for them to get out of it. But I'm into both. And I think a lot of our clients are too. So we just want to kind of do this little dive into commercial real estate. We'll do more on the topic, but hopefully this is helpful to those of you out there looking for figuring out how to navigate the commercial real estate space. Spencer can be a resource to any of you guys. You can reach out to his company, Mill Creek Commercial, at millcreekcommercial.com, right?
That's right. That's right.
Millcreekcommercial.com. Okay. And we'll include that link in the notes for the show. You can find it there. And any final words you have, Spencer? Anything like, I don't know, you got like a slogan or a, you know, words to live by in the commercial estate world?
Well, you know, we see ourselves as kind of the gateway to investing in commercial real estate for a lot of people. But if, you know, if I had to leave one nugget with your listeners,
let's do it.
I would say, I wish we could be at the Chicago summit this weekend.
Is this there weekend?
Oh man. There you go. That's we were there last year. And, we learned so much on just taking advantage of our self-directed retirement account. And we've helped a lot of people place commercial real estate in there. And you guys are doing awesome things to educate people that, mm-hmm. at least from my experience, I never knew existed.
Yeah.
So go to the summit.
You know what?
Buy your ticket today and go to the summit.
It's a great tip. It's a great tip. So for those of you catching this on time, it's sdresummit.com. It's at Chicago on Saturday, June 8th. It's also going to be in Honolulu on August 10th, but that is, I think there's seriously like two more spots left in Honolulu. So that's almost sold out. But you can catch a virtual or the recorded, go to sdresummit.com. Thanks so much, Spencer, for being on. You guys can find Spencer at millcreekcommercial.com. And we'll be back next week, of course, with another amazing hour of Refresh Your Wealth. Till then.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.